Chop Suey Nation, The Legion Cafe and Other Stories from Canada's Chinese Restaurants. Written by Anne Huey, narrated by Anne Huey. Chapter 1, Victoria, BC, Spring 2016. On a grey Monday in March, I stepped out of the Victoria International Airport wearing my winter jacket and carrying a suitcase. Hours earlier, my husband Anthony and I had boarded a 6 a.m. flight from our home in Toronto to Vancouver. From there, we had transferred onto a smaller jet that took us to Victoria. Our plan was to drive across Canada in 18 days. Planning for the trip had begun many months earlier. During a story meeting with my editors at the Globe and Mail, I mentioned my interest in Chinese restaurants. I was especially interested, I said, in the chop suey-style restaurants I saw all over the country. There's tons of great, authentic Chinese food all over the country, I said. And yet this chop suey stuff, this not Chinese Chinese, is still everywhere. Why? One of the editors, Denise Balkison, was immediately intrigued. She encouraged me to develop the idea, and so over the course of the next few weeks, we brainstormed questions that this story might answer. I wanted to understand how so many of these chop suey restaurants were so astonishingly similar. At the chop suey restaurants I'd visited in BC's interior, in southwestern Ontario and rural Quebec, Chinese somehow looked and felt exactly the same. Somehow, the restaurants all seemed to have the same red vinyl chairs, the same red tasseled hanging lanterns, the same paper menus, often printed on placemats, all printed in the same font. I also wanted to know how these chop suey restaurants were doing amid the massive influx of Chinese immigrants to cities like Toronto and Vancouver and their suburbs. The past few decades had introduced Canada to so many different kinds of Chinese. New waves of immigration from all over China, bringing with them very good, very authentic regional Chinese cuisine. No longer was it just Cantonese, but also Sichuan or Fujian or Hakka. So many varieties that it no longer made sense to talk about eating Chinese. Instead, it was Malaysian Chinese or Shanghaiese or Hong Kong Cafe Chinese, or Congee Noodle Chinese, or Chinatown Small Plate Edison Bulb Chinese. I was curious what all these different types of Chinese food meant for the chop suey stuff. I wanted to know, with so much real Chinese food available, were people still eating the fake stuff? I also wanted to know what life was like for those running these restaurants. There was one restaurant that had captured my imagination right from the start. I'd stumbled across it on the internet in a blog post titled, "I Can't Believe There's a Chinese Restaurant in Fogo." The post was about Fogo Island, the tiny island off of the northeastern tip of Newfoundland. The post described a woman living alone, running a Chinese restaurant in the middle of nowhere. For miles around, she was the only Chinese person in sight. Her life seemed about as isolated as I could possibly imagine. I wanted to understand what would compel someone to live a life like hers. The question I was looking to answer was simple. It was a question I would repeat over and over as I made my way from coast to coast, visiting the many restaurants and explaining the purpose of my visit. The question was this: how did you wind up here? What brought you here? I forget when exactly, but at some point, my editors and I decided the trip would have to be a cross-country one. After all, as far as we could tell, every small town across the country seemed to have one of these restaurants, and so I began planning. I ruled out flying right away. Flying wouldn't get me to where I needed to go. I was interested in small towns, not cities with giant airports in them. I liked the idea of a train. After all, the railway was what brought many of the Chinese to this country to begin with. But travel by train would be slow. Plus, it would mean I'd be bound by schedules. So, driving seemed like the best option. There was one problem. I hate driving. But Anthony surprised me by volunteering to come along. By happenstance, he had stumbled upon some free time and was keen to join me on what was shaping up to be a trip of a lifetime. Here was a chance for us to explore together all the nooks and crannies of this country, all the places we might never otherwise think to go see. He would do the driving, of course. Anthony loves to drive. When we'd first met almost 8 years earlier, one of the first things he'd bragged about wasn't his job or his car or any of the usual stuff. It was about his driving ability, and he'd been right to. I'm stressed and anxious behind the wheel, but he's calm and collected. His driving is smooth, effortless. Once, when I was working in Victoria for the summer, he drove from Toronto to Victoria, and back again. Together, we'd driven through most of the northeastern U.S., all the way up and down the Pacific coast, and across parts of Europe. No matter where we've been, he's always known how to get where we needed to be.